If you're a soccer fan shopping for gear, the place to go is Soccer 90. All the leagues, clubs, national teams, you'll find it at Soccer 90. See it up in Frisco, next door to the National Soccer Hall of Fame. Shop online at soccer90.com. Soccer 90, love it, live it, wear it.
It's time for the Kick Around, the Ticket's weekly show all about soccer. 2 hours of HSOs on the clubs, leagues, and tournaments of the world's game. It doesn't matter if you're new to the sport, don't worry. This is the Ticket. We're just kicking it around. Now, the Ticket's Gam and Tam. Here's Andy Swift and Peter Welpton.
Luis Mejia has one penalty save in his career for Panama. It was in 2011. Only a spot at the World Cup at stake right now. Pulisic scores! Pulisic chance for a second, chance for the Americans fourth in the dying moments of the first half. Yes!
U.S. again.
Torre, great work. Gets the return from Anthony Robinson. Robinson will hook that cross in. Pulisic! Oh, lovely hat trick! What a night!
Hi, Hopi ones, and welcome to the Kick Around Saturdays, 2 to 4 on Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310. The Ticket, where you, the good P1, sits around, talks a little soccer and all that implies. Don't forget, you can now find us on our sweet new website, thekickaround.com. Hi, it's me, Peter, and also in this broadcast studio of excellence, noted World Cup trivia encyclopedia and expert, Andy Swift.
Peter, how are you on this great day? Draw plus one means we're 6 months away from the greatest
233 days away from the kickoff of World Cup 2022. I think I have
the
math right.
So more than 6 months, yeah.
Yay!
Oh, yeah. No, we're definitely... I think when I did the math, we're just under 7.5 months away.
Man, here we go.
It was a fun week if you're into the World Cup. The draw happened. We'll talk all about that. In fact, we're going to spend the entire first hour, if you've ever wanted to hear an enthusiastic and excited and engaged Andy Swift, this hour of soccer radio is for you, because this is your wheelhouse, Mr. Swift.
That's right. Well, the original kick-around was the World Cup kick-around, right?
Yes, yes, yes. And maybe even a future edition. Mm. We'll talk about that later. Mm. We will catch up with the happenings in the Premier League today. There were some surprises and then a whole bunch of not other surprises. And we will also do the world's favorite soccer segment known as The Dribble. But we will start with the news that the USA is back in the World Cup.
Yes, after an 8-year absence, which is just one World Cup. But a lot of people are like, it's been 8 years since that, you know. They missed one World Cup.
Right. It's been 4 years, really, but that doesn't make the narrative sound so bad, right, does it? If you want to talk bad, we can talk about Italy. Italy will have had eight real years without the World Cup.
Italy's feast or famine all through their history. But, the goal was to qualify, and the team qualified. And we've said this all along since day one of qualifying of this new cycle, that it didn't matter if they finished first or third or how they did it or what transpired. The only important thing was getting in that World Cup, and they did it.
So going down to Costa Rica, where the United States has never won a World Cup qualifier. In fact, their last two qualifiers in Costa Rica were 3-1 losses and a 4-0 loss. In fact, the only point they've ever gotten in Costa Rica in the World Cup was the first one back to like 1985.
World Cup qualifying, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, in the current
iteration. It's been like seven straight losses or something like that.
Yes, it was bad. So to go down there, and we said this at the beginning, y'all. You didn't want to go to Costa Rica and have that game be critical.
Yes.
And it kind of was.
To a point.
To a point. Well, this is what I was thinking because I know everybody's disappointed, and rightfully so, that the United States ended up losing that game 2-0. And there's a lot of things to talk about that game as to why it's concerning, but it's almost an impossible situation if you're a player, because you're coming off of two really tough games. You haven't really recycled your players a whole bunch.
No, plus...
And you're in Costa... Hold on. You're in Costa Rica, and Costa Rica has nothing to really lose, they have everything to gain, and now they've thrown out this completely recycled, young, energetic bunch of guys who want to prove something.
And the reason they had to do that was because the regular guys, there were a lot of guys on yellow card.
Nine yellow cards.
So had they gotten a yellow card in that game, one of those nine, they wouldn't have been able to play the playoff game they have in June. So they also had to think about, okay, are we going to beat U.S. 6-0? Are we going to really realistically, do we have a chance to beat them 6-0? Or are we better off just testing the young guys,
right?
Which helps them long-term also, and avoiding these guys getting yelled. And that's what they went with. The U.S., too, all they had to do was avoid losing 6-0. They could lose 5-0 or better,
right?
So you go with a certain mentality when you go play a game like that also.
And the reality is, first off, we should say something very positive about Costa Rica, which is a country started this World Cup qualifying campaign not playing very well, but actually ended up with the best form out of anybody in the tournament, even Canada, by the way. I think they went 6-0-1 in their last seven games.
To win this,
to get to where
to the third round,
to end up where they were, and Canada ended up drawing them in that game a little bit ago, and then Canada lost their last game to Panama because they had already qualified.
Yep.
So Costa Rica had a fantastic little run, and I do not doubt that they'll beat New Zealand and end up in the World Cup. And what they do in the World Cup is anybody's guess at this point. But the United States, I thought, played pretty well. If it hadn't been for Keylor Navas, who's a pretty good goalkeeper, I think the U.S., the story probably changes a little bit.
Yeah, I think the U.S. did what they needed to do that game. I think the performance was fine. It wasn't great, but it wasn't horrible. And think about this, too. There's an emotional, like, they just, they had drawn in Mexico City, which was really a huge result. And at the end of the day, it's what allowed them to play this last game. Comfortably, right?
Right.
Then they pound.
They smother Panama with a pillow and put
it
to sleep.
And that right there, with all intents and purposes, that was the qualification game right there.
Yep.
And
I agree.
So you got these two highs.
Except for that stupid sign they held up afterwards.
Right,
they
but the players,
have.
Once the players, I mean, that wasn't on the player. That's
no.
Some middle management
that
dude.
Should lose their job.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree.
Once the players saw the sign that says qualify, they're like immediately wrapping it up. So, you know, they qualified, and that's all that matters.
Nobody remembers how you qualified or where you qualified. They only care if you made it to the World Cup or not. But in terms of thinking about where the United States is as a team at this point, the one thing that the qualification cycle has made very clear to me is that the United States' number one problem is the number nine position. But I'm now going to say 1B is goalkeeper, which seems almost impossible considering how good the United States typically is at fielding a top-notch goalkeeper.
Because of what we saw from Stefan that one game?
Well, I think what we've seen from Stefan over a long period of time, the stats show that he's not as good a shot stopper as Turner.
Yeah.
His footwork is better than Matt Turner's. Yeah. I think the bigger problem is neither one of them are regular starters.
Right.
And when you're running into the World Cup, you need a guy that's getting regular games. And Turner's going to sit on the bench at Arsenal. He's hurt right now. He's not playing for New England. He's going to switch to Arsenal, and he's not going to get time. Stefan, unless he gets a loan out from Man City, isn't going to be getting regular time.
Yep.
And as a fan of the team, I don't like Matt. I don't like Zach Stefan as a keeper because he's just a little too cool for the room. I'm just going to take my time doing what I want to do.
It was apparent on that second goal, especially.
Just the way that he's a little too lackadaisical, and it drives me nuts.
You know what is crazy is that you've identified the goalkeeper position as the 1B problem when goalkeeping has always, been the strength.
That's exactly why I think it's so surprising to even think about that because it's never been an issue for this
country. The number nine position is a problem, that's old hat to us.
Well, right? How far have we come of a nation when I'm not even talking about center mid or creativity or holding mid?
Great point, because forever it was like, if we only had creative midfielders, if we only had a 10 and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Our midfield
is fine.
It's really good, actually.
I'm not worried.
Yeah. Yes. So, speaking of the nine, Pepe is not an automatic to make the World Cup.
No.
I mean, I think he will. I think he will. But 6 months ago, it was like, you know, just stay, play an MLS through the World Cup, and then look at all the offers you're going to get.
Hype trains don't run forever, Andy.
Yeah.
The hype train eventually gets to the station.
He just needs to be on a better team. And yes. Anyway, that's beside the point. But look, now it's all about, for Berhalter, what is next. And let's remember this, too. Let's not lose sight of this. This World Cup, it was extremely important to make it. But this World Cup, because they have such a young team.
The youngest
in their history, right?
Well, of any of the qualified nations, it's the youngest national team going to the World Cup.
This goes even more than my point then. That this World Cup is all about preparing this group, this young group, to get experience in a World Cup, because really the goal is to make a deep, deep run in 2026 here in the U.S.
Agreed.
I mean, that is the goal. This is the goal of this 8-year cycle.
Yes.
You want to get out of your group and Qatar, of course, all that. But really, it's all about going deep in 2026.
Yeah, it's something that if you're just casually watching the national team that you may not be aware of is that the U.S. men's national team is so young. Somebody ran these numbers the other day that of the 32 teams going to the World Cup this year, the U.S. is not only the youngest collective average age, and they did this by taking all the players that had played in qualifying cycle and then ran the average. The U.S. is so young that you could go 2 more years and they still would be younger.
Wow.
You could add 2 years and they still would be younger than Ecuador, which is the second youngest team. The difference is like 24 years and 26 and a half years.
That's amazing.
Average.
That just speaks volumes of what lays ahead of us past this World Cup.
Let me also point this out. The game against Costa Rica. Costa Rica realizes, as we said, we're never going to win this game 6-0. So we're going to throw a bunch of 17 and 18-year-olds out there.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first game in qualification this entire time where the U.S. was actually the older average age team.
That's crazy.
Isn't that nuts?
You know, and speaking of these young kids, kudos, you know, while we're talking about it, to the FC Dallas Academy, who has fed a lot of these guys to the national team, right? And at one point, there were like 5 or 6 on the field that could trace their roots back to
FC
Dallas.
I'll have to find Garrett's tweet. Garrett Melcher, who is with the club, tweeted this fascinating thing the other day. Essentially, I think if I'm remembering it correctly, 20-some-odd percent of all the goals scored.
Yep.
By the national team in qualification was scored by somebody with Dallas. 20-something percent of the assists was somebody from Dallas.
Yeah.
And that's a huge deal. Now,
FC Dallas.
Wahoo!
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's fascinating stuff.
Yeah. So kudos to the FC Dallas. Some people are calling them FC USMNT now as their nickname. But no, actually, you know, they deserve a lot of credit for how they've helped the national team with their youth movement. So now for Berhalter, it's all about identifying not the best 23, but the ideal 23, right? I mean, we're on the same page there. It's not necessarily the best 23.
Have you heard the rumor that they may announce that the rosters could be...
Right?
Is it... Oh, I'd heard
up
maybe...
to 26.
I heard maybe they were adding more than one. Oh, you said 23, up to 26.
Yeah, 23 is the standard, and they may go to 26 maybe.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is where everybody starts to hem and haw and get angry or frustrated because you've got players you think need to get called up. And
but remember, it's not just the best 23. You have to think about rotation. You have to think about who you're playing and styles and who fits better. Teammates, pairings, locker room experience.
Can we hop in the Wayback Machine for a minute?
Okay. Yeah.
Go in the Wayback Machine to the last time the U.S. qualified for a World Cup.
Yep.
Do you remember the drama of Klinsmann and Landon Donovan?
Yeah. It was
when Klinsmann pulled Donovan out of the World Cup roster.
Now, that was a debacle for Klinsmann because Donovan deserved to be on that team.
Do you remember the insanity that ensued of that? So, and I guess my next question for you, Andy, is where do you sit on Greg Berhalter as the manager of this team?
I think... he deserves credit for getting the team to the World Cup. That was his goal. Look, since he's been, and we have been critical of Berhalter, but, you know, in terms of proof in the pudding, a one Nations League, one Gold Cup, got his team qualified to the World Cup.
He didn't lose to Mexico.
He didn't lose
to
Mexico.
Qualifying.
What more? I mean, I don't know what more
And if a couple of people had finished their chances in the Azteca, they would have gotten their first win in Mexico.
Right. So I think we have to, you know, sit back a little bit and give them credit. And I think even if they don't get out of the group stage next World Cup, I think he's in for 2026. That's my prediction.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, because it's a young team. They're the guys that he's been developing, and they're going to see this through 2026 with him.
Wow. Yep. Super interesting. Mm-hmm. Well,
yes, thank you, Peter.
Andy, that's a very good segue, because now it appears it is time for us to talk about who the United States will and may play in Qatar, and we'll do that next here on the Kick Around. There were some interesting and pretty much expected results in the Premier League today, and we'll discuss that here coming up a little bit later in the show. Welcome back to the Kick Around, Saturdays 2 to 4 here on Sport Radio 1310 and 96.7. I'm Peter, he's Andy, and we are talking World Cup because it is not nigh upon us. It's over 7 months away. Having to explain to people why it's weird that the World Cup's being played in November, December.
And, the draw typically takes place in December, 7 months out also. Except,
yes, you know. And what also makes the World Cup draw this time weird is that not all the teams have been decided.
Yes.
Has that ever happened before?
No, that's a first.
Yeah, so this is really unusual, and it really added to the oddity. I mean, if you've never watched a World Cup draw, I'm sure I was in the first few times I watched it. It's confusing because it seems ridiculous that they pull all of these balls out, even though it's the team can only go in one very specific
they
place.
They want to show that the ball's accounted for.
Yes, and then there's this additional weird oddity of once a team has been pulled to go in a group, another ball is pulled to decide what of the three additional positions within the group they can go. And that actually is a cool randomness to it, which adds to the schedule. But we'll talk more about that in
a
second.
Just to let you know, Norm was very upset how long it took on Friday.
Yes, I'm sure he was, because you mean the entire, or just getting to it.
Yeah, they were just waiting because it was an hour. He goes, it took
45 minutes.
It took forever to get to the actual draw.
It's like the pop and circumstance.
Yeah, it's
first.
The whole thing. Yeah. And anyway, so we'll talk more about that in a second. I just wanted
veterans, though, we know better than to tune in right away, right?
I had kind of predicted in my head this isn't going to happen until 11:45. So anyway, USA gets drawn into Group B, and in Group B, and I was convinced when I saw the pots, I was convinced it was going to be Portugal. Mm-hmm. I was convinced it was going to be Iran, and I was convinced the third team was going to be Ghana.
Because of prior history.
Just because
of
prior history, it would have been the ghost of World Cup's past perfectly.
Yeah, or England. There's prior history there.
And there is with Iran.
Yeah.
Right? So, right. So it ends up being England, Iran.
Yeah.
And then the third team is the one that we don't know, and it could be Scotland or Ukraine. Those two teams are going to play each other in June, and the winner of that will play Wales, and the winner of that game will be the fourth team in this group. Now, those games are also being played in Qatar, correct?
Yes.
All these games that are still now, playoff games are going to be played in Qatar. Qatar, I think June 13th.
Around there, 13th, 16th, or 10th, 13th, 16th. But ultimately, not a bad group.
Well, I'm going to make a case for you.
Okay.
Just listen to me. Just hear me out.
Before you make this case,
because I'm a bit of a drama queen and I love to get into other people's business.
Let's just talk about pot one and the pot one possibilities. And would you rather have had Argentina or Brazil? No, right? France? No. So you got one of the better draws out of pot one, which included the eight. Qatar at home, probably better, and Portugal. Those are the two that would have been better than England. After that, you prefer Argentina or Brazil or France?
See, you're coming at this from a different angle.
Yes,
what I'm coming at from is the actual comparisons to how everything else did play out. You're right. I agree with you. It could have been worse.
Yeah. Your comparison, which you're about to share with us, and I'll let you share it, is based on ELO numbers and FIFA rankings and all that
stuff.
Well,
not FIFA rankings. I don't believe in FIFA rankings. I'm just saying.
Well, I look at it as realistic how World Cups play out.
You're right.
And this is not a bad group.
No, I'm not saying it's a bad group.
Okay.
I'm just saying if you could, like, the big talk after the draw is there is no group of death.
Correct. First time I've ever seen anything as balanced as this one.
This is, and the numbers don't lie. Mm-hmm. The eyeball test tells you that, and when you start digging into rankings and ratings
it all works out, really.
Work out that way. Now, because there are teams to be determined, mm-hmm. some of that is in flux.
Okay.
Group B, which is where the United mm-hmm. States is, when you look at it on the surface, England, Iran, and it could be Wales or Scotland or Ukraine, mm-hmm. you're like, that's not that bad. And you're right. But in comparison to the other groups and how it played out, it could actually be the most difficult group. Because if you base everything...
This is where I'm looking at you with, like, whatever eyes. But go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
If you have to, grab onto something,
okay.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that is called the ELO ratings,
sure.
which is different than the FIFA rankings.
Yeah.
FIFA rankings, I think, are a little too vague and fluctuy and not very mm-hmm. appropriate. ELO ratings, mm-hmm. which is based on a whole mathematical deal that they use for chess, has historically been far more accurate in my mind.
All right.
If you do the average, the group B is somewhere, is always, no matter who ends up in that fourth position, is going to be one of the three hardest groups. And if Wales is the team that goes through, just based on ELO ratings average, it suddenly now becomes the most difficult
group. So for example, what's Iran's ELO rating?
23.
All right. FIFA's 21. What's England's?
US is 21. You said FIFA's 21.
No, I said
Iran's
FIFA. FIFA ranking
is 21.
You're saying.
Okay,
so what's the U.S. in your ELO?
21.
All right, 15 here. And what's England?
Five
here. So a little bit similar.
Okay, but now what is Scotland in FIFA?
39.
Okay, they're 35 in ELO. What is Ukraine?
27.
24 in ELO. Okay. And what is Wales?
18.
Oh, 19 in ELO.
So very similar. So the reason I wanted to compare those two is because they're not too far off.
FIFA moved to an ELO math. Years
in 2014, who did the U.S. have? Germany ranked 2.
Mm-hmm.
Portugal ranked 5th. The U.S. was 14th, very similar now, and Ghana 24. Very similar group. Stronger, actually, and the U.S. got out of that group. In 2010, England 9. The U.S. was 14th, very similar. Slovenia was the mid-tier European team that they're going to get, 31st. And Algeria was the Asia-Africa team. In this case, Africa, we get an Asian team, 26.
I think they
both advanced out of their
group. All right. You and I are making, I think, very similar arguments. Mm-hmm. I think all I'm trying to say is my general sense was that people thought the United States ended up in a... I think people automatically think the U.S. are going to go through in this group. And I think the group is far more difficult than people are giving it credit for.
And what I'm saying is they're identical to the 2014 and 2010 groups the U.S. was in,
right.
which they advanced out of. So the expectation is you got to advance out of this group.
Okay.
Sorry.
It is. Two things I would say to that. One is there's way too much time and way too many things can happen between now and then.
Of course. Now,
as Bob joked yesterday, LeBron could decide to play soccer between now and then.
Right.
Two, we don't really know because I do think the group changes if Wales goes in. Versus if Ukraine goes in.
Because Wales is a little deeper.
Wales is deeper. They've been playing better.
Yeah. They're a little older, too, though.
But... And they also play a style that I think is conducive to a tournament versus something else.
Yeah, which will, as we get closer to World Cup, we're gonna handicap all this stuff for you and throw these kind of things.
Now let me also throw this out. And the other thing that makes Group B interesting, and one thing you should always do when you start looking at how the schedule plays out, is not just the group they're in, but where their position is in the group, meaning the order in which they play the opposing teams.
Mm-hmm.
And England's schedule is really weird because they kick off the tournament against Iran, a team I don't think they've ever played internationally before.
Okay.
All right? So that's an interesting game for them. Then they have to turn around and play on Black Friday, the United States, mm-hmm. and then they have to finish the round, arguably against Scotland or Wales, which is a whole thing, whole story unto itself.
Or the world darling, Ukraine.
Or the world darling, which is a different thing. But I don't get away from the idea that England versus Scotland or England versus Wales isn't unto itself this like massive thing for those two countries.
Yeah. The other thing about this group, because it's Group B, Group A and B, they play... Earlier in the tournament, the U.S. will play
on day one.
Right. England will too. The EPL ends 7 days before. So teams in this group don't have a lot of time to prepare. But who has more players playing in the EPL?
United States. Or England. Absolutely.
So that hurts England more than it does the other teams in their group. And then this is the last thing. The U.S. plays Iran third. That's when depth matters. So if you have an advantage, a depth advantage, you don't have it with England. England is a deeper club, mm-hmm. right? A deeper side. You want to play them earlier when depth is not as important. You want to play that team you have a depth advantage over last.
Agreed.
And they're playing Iran third, and that's a benefit. And then the last thing is B matches with A if you advance out, and A is an easy group. And so your first knockout round game is against a team from an easy group, and you have an easier round of 16 match. So I think Group B, in many ways, turned out to be a good thing for the U.S.
Okay. I think the difference between you and I is minor.
Yeah.
I think you think the U.S. is a lock to get out of the group?
No team is a lock. No team is a lock to get out of the group.
Okay.
Any group. No team is a lock.
Okay. All right.
But
I think it's a more difficult group than I think you think it is.
I think it is what it is, and it's a group that the U.S. has a good opportunity to advance out of. And I think we should be optimistic. You tend to fret about your national team, which is okay.
Yep.
That's good. That I understand that. But I think we can be optimistic that if things are done right, if Berhalter puts a good roster together and they're prepared, you should be able to advance out of this group.
It would be a fantastic sign of of growth and progress if they get out of this group, just based on how young they are. Mm-hmm. And
you nailed it, because it is a young group, and that's the one thing,
right?
You know, when it comes to World
how
Cup,
many of these how
yes
you know it's funny, somebody pointed this out the other day when the U.S. and Iran played each other in 1998. Now remember that year.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty sure I'm correct in saying there will be no players on the team that were alive when the U.S. and Iran played each other in 1998.
Berhalter needs to take a couple of veteran guys. And that's going to
he'll
take
call
a-
up Landon?
No, but you know, he's got to identify a couple positions.
Yeah.
Especially if they expand to 26. You have to have a little bit of veteran presence.
It is an interesting conversation to be had about how much is this particular World Cup really, ultimately, nothing more than a staging area and a practice round for the 2026 World Cup being played here in the United States. And if you play really well and don't get out of the group, is that a big deal? I mean, you'd love to get out of the group, but if you're United States, what you're really trying to do is make sure that your best players get as much experience so that when it really, and I know this sounds ridiculous, but the idea that you're the host in the next World Cup,
With a really solid team,
you may have a chance at doing something really cool in four more years. I don't know. It would. I don't want to ever think about a World Cup as a. I don't know what the word as a testing ground or just something to kind of goof around in.
No, but this is a development opportunity.
A development. That's a great way of saying it. I don't know. The way that the draw worked out was fascinating for the United States. The fact that it's England and Iran. In there. And then, of course, if Ukraine ends up being the fourth team, just all of the individual game-by-game storylines politically and socially and all that stuff turns into their own fascinating tales.
A country that's
a neat story.
Gained independence from that country. They're playing against each other. A country that wants to get independence. Scotland is in that group.
All right. So the U.S. plays
Ukraine
whichever this team is. They play them first in game one on Monday, the 21st. Then they play England on Friday, the 25th, Black Friday. And then they will play Iran on match day 9, which is Tuesday, the 29th. And all of those games will start at 1 p.m. here locally, Dallas time.
Black Friday, 1 p.m., 2 Eastern, 11 Pacific in the U.S., Black Friday against England. That is going to be a massive,
There's no football. There's no other sport going on.
It is the ratings for that game.
Are going to be through the roof.
Yep.
It's going to be crazy. All right, when we come back, we'll discuss all the other groups in the World Cup coming up next year on the Kick Around. a national team player for the United States is in trouble with the law, Andy. And we'll tell you the story during the dribble a little bit later here in the show. I just want to update something I was saying earlier related to the U.S. men's national team and our local MLS team, Dallas. 29% of all the goals scored for the United States during qualifying was from an FC Dallas Academy player, a kid that came up through the system, and 33 of the assists. That is a pretty impressive stat.
It is. For the national team, we're talking
for the national team.
You know, I mean, yeah, yeah. It's like crazy.
I was talking about this the other day. I remember back when the Burn days and the World Cup cycle would come around and we'd all sit around and go, man, it'd be kind of cool if we had a national team player.
Yeah, right.
And the national team would play
for any country.
And there would be no Dallas player. We never, you know, we had Chad Deering, but Chad played for Dallas after he had finished playing for the national team.
Right.
And Jeff Agus was from Dallas, but he didn't play for the Dallas.
No.
And
our big hope was always Jason. Why isn't Jason getting called up?
Yeah. It was a crazy deal. So, listen, we're living good times in this particular moment. All right, the draw did happen just yesterday. All of the groups have been decided. There are a few things yet to be determined. But Andy, I think, as we said earlier, the big takeaway is that for maybe the first time ever, there is no really clear-cut group of death.
Right, exactly. And I think the reason is because of the way the draw is conducted now in modern times. Basically, this World Cup and the last World Cup is when they started, is that they seed by FIFA rankings. And so, you know, for look, I don't like the FIFA rankings either. You have your ELO. I think they're both similar and they both have flaws.
Especially
when it comes to figuring out who's going to do well in World Cups. And we'll talk about that later. But I think ultimately, though, it has given us more balanced groups. The one drawback being like Germany ends up, or a country like Germany will end up in pot two every once in a while. And so they got paired with Spain in one of the groups. And you could argue, okay, that's a really hard group. But then the other two teams in that group are going to be much weaker. So then those two teams are probably safe to advance. So, yes, ultimately, I've never seen as balanced a group pairings as I have for this World
Cup. You are the person that retains the greatest amount of World Cup trivia in his brain that I know. What was the worst... What was the most deadly group of death in the history of the World Cup that you can remember?
Man, I don't know. It seems every World Cup there was one. But last World Cup, we had one. Remember? I don't remember which.
Okay.
Yeah.
There always is one, and we always marvel at how difficult it is. Oh, no, it's like the Dutch, the Argentinians.
Right. Well,
you know.
Let me tell you a group of death. In 2014 in Brazil, this is a group that Costa Rica advanced out of.
Right.
Remember when Costa Rica made that run? In their group was Uruguay, Italy, and England. Seven World Cups won between those three teams, and Costa Rica finished in first.
It was great.
Goes to show you.
Yes, because there's, Andy, because you are the great historian of the World Cup, you're the one that always taught me, and I think I'm saying this correctly, the World Cup is essentially the same story every year. You just kind of reallocate the characters for different places.
Right.
Right?
There will be surprises.
There will be at least one big country that will blow and fall out in the group stage.
Then a surprise, a dark horse that will go relatively far. And when it's all said and done, one of eight countries will win it.
And more times than not, no matter how good or bad, wherever they are in the rankings or whatever you think of them, the home nation generally tends to play beyond itself.
Right.
Think United States in 1994.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Qatar is potentially one of those types of teams. And they're in an interesting group with Ecuador, Senegal, and the Netherlands in Group A.
Right. And the reason this group is considered among the weaker groups is because the group seed, the number one seed in this group, happens to be Qatar because they're the home team. The home team is always a one seed. So the home country being so weak makes this group already that much weaker because the one seed is not strong. But I will say this, it's a very even group. With all due respect to the Netherlands, who there are tournaments when they do really well and get to the final. Many consider the Netherlands the best country to never win a World Cup, best footballing country to never win a World Cup, but they also blow it a lot, right?
Yeah.
So you could give me two teams out of this group, any kind of combination of two teams getting out of this group, and it wouldn't be a surprise to me. Like if it's Qatar and Senegal, yes. It could be Qatar and the Netherlands, yes. Ecuador and Senegal, you know, any combination. And it'd be like, yeah, that's realistic.
That makes sense. That would be a common World Cup story. We'll skip B because we've already talked about it. And C is Argentina, Saudi Arabia, Mexico, mm-hmm. and Poland.
Right.
Now, Argentina, I think, is going to be one of those teams that is kind of the one of the, like, very commonly at everybody's top of the list to win this thing.
Right. And for good reason. Now, they are the defending Copa America champion, and the defending Copa American champion has never won the World Cup.
Hmm.
So whoever has won the Copa America the last edition before the World Cup, that team has never. So when Brazil would win a Copa America, they wouldn't win the World Cup, Argentina, Uruguay. So, and but this Argentine side is actually less and less dependent all the time on Messi. Now, this is Messi's last World Cup. So that we're going to get a lot of drama about that, right? And is he going to go out? It's also the first World Cup after Maradona passed away. So is this Messi's opportunity to finally win that trophy? I think this Argentina team actually has a good chance to go far because they are less dependent on Messi. And that makes them better than they have been over the last three or four editions when they depended too much on Messi. And there's only been one team in World Cup history that it was so dependent on one player and they actually ended up winning it. And that was Maradona in 86. That team was very average, but Maradona was probably the best performance by a player ever. So I don't think this Argentina team depends that much on Messi, and I think they're better for it.
Unfortunately, the Messi versus Lewandowski game is the third game of the schedule for both those teams. But that's always, you know, big names facing each other off in a World Cup is always a big draw, and that would be the one for that particular one. The next group is the one that's really in the biggest state of flux, Group D.
Yeah.
France at the top, then there's an unknown in at two, Denmark and Tunisia. And the reason why this group is weird is because the three teams that could take that position are really far apart in terms of where they fall in the ratings,
yeah,
right?
Sure, yeah.
So if it could be the
UAE,
United mm-hmm. Arab Emirates, which mm-hmm. is ranked 77th, yeah. Australia, which is 46th. They play each other first.
Mm-hmm.
The winner of that would then play Peru, which is ranked 15th in the world.
Yeah.
And if Peru ends up winning and ends up being the fourth team, the average of the score of this group becomes very different. If it's the UAE, this group changes a lot.
Yes, and right away, everybody's pointing at France. Easy group for them to get out of, and you know they should finish first. And they should. They're the defending champions, good young team. But the last time a champion defended the title and won, like the last time we've had back-to-back champions, it was over 60 years ago. 58 and 62 when Brazil won. So France, you know, good luck winning back-to-back titles. But can they get out of this group pretty easily? I think they can, even if it's Peru in there. I like the Danes as one of the dark horses.
Do you?
Yes.
Okay.
They did really well in the Euros.
Christian Eriksen played pretty well today.
He played well. he did really well in an exhibition match they just played, a friendly against Serbia. I think the Danes can make a good run in this tournament.
Group E is Spain. And then it could either be Costa Rica or New Zealand, probably Costa Rica, I think we're going to say, Germany and Japan.
Yeah, so you look at this group right away on paper, Spain and Germany are the two clear favorites to advance, even if it's Costa Rica instead of New Zealand as the third team and then Japan. Spain and Germany clearly above the other two.
Yeah, Germany and Spain play each other the second game of that particular mm-hmm. group. And then Group F. Oh, look, Andy, it's the maple syrups.
Yep.
This is their group. Belgium, Canada, Morocco, and Croatia. Now, wait a second. Are you in trouble? Do you have a family conflict here?
Yes, very much so.
Canada and Croatia.
Yeah.
That's part of your lineage.
That's one of the issues when you have so many countries you can root for in a World Cup. Sometimes this happens, so we'll have to figure that one out.
A home family divided.
Now, this is a really interesting group because Belgium is the top seed in this group. And this is the Belgium golden generation that has never won anything. We keep touting them. They're a good side. They're getting older. They're not as good now. They're still ranked second in the world if you follow that FIFA ranking. Now, when it comes to World Cup, I throw that out. And I'm thinking this is a group that could be really interesting because Belgium is a team, is a top seed that can be had. That's why I was thinking for the U.S. to have gotten Belgium, that wouldn't have been bad either.
Mm-hmm.
Croatia, again, they got to the final in the last World Cup. Older, this is another good generation they had, and they're getting a little bit older. That opens up the opportunity for Canada to perhaps do something. I don't know if they'll get out of the group. Morocco has had success in World Cups. They've gotten out of their groups before in World Cup history. So Morocco is not a side to take lightly. I think it's a evenish group, if you can believe that.
Well, you know, it's funny. Canada deserves a ton of praise because the leap that Canada made to get to this World Cup, getting to the World Cup, but the fact that they essentially went undefeated up until the final window to get there is tremendous, considering that the only other time Canada had even gotten to the final stage of World Cup qualifying in CONCACAF dates all the way back to the 80s.
Yeah, 86 was the only other time they played in a World Cup. So if they score a goal, if they get a point, it'll all be first. They didn't score a goal, they didn't get a point in that World Cup.
Soccer! It's
so for them, just being in the tournament. But this is a team that, you know, they play within their means. They know what they have. They use their athleticism. And it's a team that can maybe get them a result or two that
it's
might.
It's not the sexiest soccer. They'll sit back, defend in a low block, and they'll try to beat you on the counter. But sometimes that really works very well in a World Cup.
With some of the weapons they have, like Alphonso Davies.
Well, that along with the fact that this is a team that has been playing together for so long because they had to play all the pre-qualification rounds.
Yep.
So they've got a ton of time of experience playing together, which is
that's
valuable.
Part of their secret, and that's what their coach touts as well. It's something really quick, too. Croatia has had a lot of influence in Canadian soccer, Croatian immigrants in the Toronto area. So they'll be playing against each other. And the Canadian goalkeeper is actually Croatian. He's a naturalized citizen. Yeah, so
crazy.
Tough for him. Yeah.
Yeah. Watching Canada play Belgium in that first game will be fascinating to see just a real measure of where Canadian soccer is. Group G is Brazil, Serbia, Switzerland, and Cameroon.
So Brazil, on paper, clearly the favorite out of this group. They're number one ranked team in the world now, according to the FIFA rankings. By the way, ever since the FIFA rankings came out, right before the 94 World Cup, only one number one ranked team at the time of the draw ended up winning the World Cup. That was 2010, Spain. And only one other time did the number one team even get to a final. That was 98 Brazil when they lost to France. So just because you're number one, you're ranked number one, doesn't mean that you're going to do anything in the World Cup. Now, this group, Serbia and Switzerland, with Brazil, they played in Russia. They were grouped together in Russia. So they know each other well. Switzerland got out of that. I like the Swiss to get out of this group. They're very pragmatic, and they usually get out of the group stage when they play in a World Cup.
Plus, they have Shaqiri. And then the final group is group...
The player, not the singer.
H. Isn't that the same thing?
The player, not the singer.
I know. I was making a joke. Okay. Portugal, Ghana, Uruguay, and South Korea.
This group is for the taking.
It is.
Right?
Yes.
It's for the taking. And don't count out the Koreans either, because they get results in World Cups. They don't always advance, but they get results. Uruguay is a little older. They have the history. They have what they call Uruguayan garra, which is they play above their means. Ghana, we've seen what they can do in World Cups. U.S. knows very well. And Portugal, this is Ronaldo's last hurrah. Do you like that team without Ronaldo? He adds something to that team. He's a little older.
Yeah. I mean, I don't anticipate much from anybody in terms of getting deep into the tournament, but I think the group unto itself will be fascinating.
Yeah, I agree.
It's going to be one of those deals where it's going to come down to the last day, and it will be great.
Beautiful.
Real quick. Talking about stars that did not make it to the tournament, Mo Salah with Egypt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I still am fascinated because so many people have asked me about this. So the Senegal-Egypt final, the second leg that ends up going to penalty kicks, and it's in Senegal, and all of the lasers.
Yeah, I know.
And is there, I mean... It just seems ridiculous to me that the Egyptians didn't complain more.
Yeah, but because they're doing it too. That's part of the issue.
So when they
showed some images of games in Egypt where the Egyptians have these, I guess it's a thing.
When the Senegalese were there in the first leg that happened?
Yeah, in other games that they've had. So they have to be careful how much they, but the rules are you can't have laser devices in the stadium. You're not allowed to have those if you're a fan.
Can you have 20,000 of them?
Right, even less so. So FIFA will fine Senegal something,
right.
But They don't care. I mean, look, they can get fined $5 million. They're going to make like far above that making the World Cup, right?
It was a really weird moment for me because Egypt is such an awful team to watch. They're so boring and so negative and are doing everything they possibly can do not to score and not to get scored on. It's so ridiculous. I didn't want them to go through, but then I was mad at the Senegalese fans for doing the lasers.
So then you started rooting for Egypt.
Well, I just wanted chaos, and it was weird, but watching that was...
I wanted Salah in the World Cup. I mean, nothing against Sané, but Sané won the Africa Cup, so he had that. I didn't want Salah to be 0 for 2 and Sané 2 for, because, you know, that's the psyche. And you saw it today, right? We'll talk about it when... We talk about EPL, but Salah didn't play well, and it's almost like he was not 100%.
He probably has some vision issues that he's dealing with. All right, so Andy, are you full?
I'm full in.
Full on?
Yes.
Engorged for the World Cup?
Yes.
I should have said engaged.
Also, both.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. Are you not?
No, I just see this is the happy, enthusiastic, excited, emotional Andy Swift
that I love
because it's the only thing I ever see super excited about.
Maybe we should do the World Cup every 2 years.
This is the worst type of human being. I have a feeling you're going to get your wish.
Hey, by the way, enjoy this one. This is the last 32-team format World Cup.
Well, there's a lot of people talk about the fact that's probably the last time the U.S.-Mexico plays in a World Cup qualifier of that kind of nature. It's weird how things change, I suppose, like five substitutes. I hate that. All right. When we come back, somebody in the Premier League lost today, and we'll talk about it next here on The Kick Around. Oh, the best part of the football season starts up this week. It's the quarterfinals of the Champions League. And we'll talk about that here in just a little bit. Welcome back to The Kick Around. Saturdays 2 to 4 here on The Ticket. I'm Peter. That there is Andy. And there was a bit of a surprising result today. As Chelsea... Now, well, let me start this. Andy, we talk about this all the time. When coming back from international break, things get weird for a lot of teams because guys have traveled a long way. They've put on a ton of miles. They're exhausted. Things get weird. There was a little bit less of that today, but Chelsea, and in fact, Tuchel, after the game, talked a lot about this in his post-game comments about the mileage and how they just couldn't, you know, everything was weird because of the international break. But how weird could it be to lose at home to Brentford 4-1.
Yeah. So were you able to watch any of the game or some of it?
So I was, because it was part of the 9 o'clock grouping, I was watching Goal Rush on Peacock.
Okay. So.
And I just kept, it was pretty much Chelsea winning the, you know, it was 0-0 for a very long time.
Halftime,
0-0. And I wasn't really paying that close attention to it. And I thought, oh, Chelsea will pull this out.
And Chelsea was pretty comfortable. And they scored first. Shortly after the half started, I don't know, 49th, 50th minute?
49th
like
minute, Rüdiger.
Golasso, by the way. Did you see the goal?
No,
no. Man, outside the box, just a long-range shot. And then it's not like Chelsea's wheels fell off, but they couldn't defend anymore. They were like Keystone Cops in the back. And Brentford took full advantage, and Brentford looks a little bit better with a certain Danish player playing there in the middle of the park. I mean, he brings a lot to this team.
Yeah.
And
in a 10-minute period, this game just kind of like flipped on its head. It went from 1-0 to 1-1 to 2-1 to 3-1, and Brentford poured it on, and yes, Christian Eriksen scored at Stamford Bridge. What a fantastic story that is.
He's a presence for him.
And I told you. I told you.
So now the question about him is, you know, at the end of the season, Brentford wants him back. And, you know, I think the feeling is if a top six club comes asking for him, they'll let him go. But if not, I think he's happy to stay there.
I would think so. I mean, it's in London. I'm sure the conditions are great.
They open the doors for him.
The coach is Danish.
Yeah.
He's very comfortable there. There are several other Danes playing for the team.
Now, for Chelsea, this doesn't really matter. I mean, Chelsea's so entrenched in third. They're not going to get to second. They're not going to fall out of the top four.
Even with this result,
their goal difference is massive.
They are now still 5 points ahead of Arsenal. So even if Arsenal beats Crystal Palace on Monday, there will still be a sizable lead.
Yeah, but really, you look at fifth, right? And there's 8 points between them and Spurs.
And United, which both have 51.
Yeah, and yeah. United, right. You're United right. has a game in hand, or yes. one more game.
But, right,
yeah.
exactly. So it's you're right, but that's not going to make – I mean, with everything no. else yeah, going
true.
On with Chelsea,
true. There's
with
a
the ownership
bit of
issue
happening.
And
yes.
all of that, so question came yeah. up. A question came up to me the other day, and I don't know the answer to. So now that Abramovich is cut from all of this and sanctioned and all of that – when the team sells, whether it's for $2 billion, $3 billion, $4 billion, and whoever mm-hmm. it sells to, where does that money now go?
That's a good question, and people don't know. They're going to put it in some kind of fund. Abramovich has said that he's willing to just donate it to charity. But legally, that may not be able to happen because they can't move that money.
You know what they should do? Mm-hmm. They should take it all and turn it into like $5 pounds
okay.
notes
okay.
and put it in a helicopter
and just
fly
over,
the country and drop it all over the – or just London, yeah,
or
sure.
what about the for Chelsea fans? Just gather them in the stadium and then just drop it.
Do a money drop yeah. like they do in Vegas.
So where are we with the ownership group? I think there's three or four that are kind of like the, quote, finalists now. The Rickett family being – the Ricketts.
Right.
Being
– and we talked about this last week.
Yeah,
there's some
and it's not moving forward. I mean, they are doing everything they can to appease the supporters groups, and they're having none of it. So it'll be interesting because what they're saying is from the bank's perspective – the best bid is actually the Ricketts family. And so the bank is probably wanting that group. I mean, the it's not the Ricketts. It's whoever they're partnering with is like a gazillionaire. Like, is three times as wealthy as Abramovich. Just
oh, wow.
to give you, yeah. So that's who the bank wants to sell it to, but the supporters are going to have an issue with that. And I don't know how much they'll come and play. At the end of the day, when it's all said and done, how much voice will they have? I don't know.
It's funny because now that the people selling it aren't the people that originally owned it, how much, I mean, what is the, is it just simply whoever makes the best offer? Is it the one that the fans,
well,
that's the part in the process of deciding who's going to win this is I'm confused by.
The bank brokering the deal gets a fee. Gets a percentage. So, yeah, they're going to try to get the best deal.
Yeah, so that's really the big result of the day. 4-1, Brentford winning at Stamford Bridge. Now, Liverpool and Man City obviously are a big storyline. Both of those teams won today. Liverpool, man, just what was the Liverpool game that was at 6:30 in the morning that was a total snoozer? Or was that a Man City game recently?
Just a while back?
Yeah, a few weeks ago. Maybe. This was very much similar to that. Watford, tried really, really hard, but Liverpool never looked too bothered out of this game.
Yeah.
Fabinho with the penalty kick late in the game to kind of separate it out. I mean, Watford did have a couple of chances early in the game. They probably should have converted. There was one, I think, right after halftime they probably should have converted and didn't. But Liverpool, again, never looked too bothered out of this whole
thing. And they passed City at that point, heading into the City game. For first place.
Right.
And then it was kickoff, and then 5 minutes later, they
Kevin De Bruyne scores, and if you thought Liverpool didn't look bothered, well, City at Burnley, man, they could have slept. They could have taken a nap, and that couldn't have been anywhere. City ends up beating Burnley 2-0 today. Manchester United in the late game hosting Leicester City. I had no idea what to expect out of this other than there was no way I was going to come out of this feeling good because United is such a... such a club in the worst possible shape, and if you look at the performance today, Leicester City is an okay side, but they're not a great team.
No.
I'm not even sure they're a good team, but they were in so much in control of this game for long stretches.
Yeah,
and just at Old Trafford made United look very second rate.
How many times, especially as a United supporter, do you watch, especially today, and just ask, what are you doing?
All the time.
Yeah, which is bad.
And
you don't want to be asking that question so much.
And it's confusing because there's so much talent on the field. All this money's been spent. It's one of the biggest brands out there, and they just can't screw it together. And it's because of all the decision-making tied around how players have been bought, managers have been put in place, and there's just no plan. And you watch the players play, and none of them really look like they care that much.
You know what? I get the feeling that they don't really care about the crest I mean, that's overdone, like, oh, you're fighting for the crest. But I think most teams, their players at least have a love of the jersey for as long as they're at least signed, you know, by that team.
Well, in the Premier League, the difference between the teams that win and the teams that don't is that little extra something. And you typically see that when a team collectively really cares about that particular game and moment, and you just don't see it out of United anymore, right? Like if they're in a really good attacking position, maybe then suddenly they start mm-hmm. to look really good, but it's all the other stuff in the middle third of the field, especially when they're defending. It all just looks kind of half-ass all the time. And look, they got guys whose contracts are up. Nobody knows who's going to be the manager next year. Chris Armas is sitting on the sideline with his mouth open and his AirPods in. It just all looks ridiculous.
You said it this time, not me, because you always get on me when I bring it up. But yes, correct. Fernandez did sign, right?
He signed a new deal.
That's good. He's a good player. Look, De Gea, world-class save today. That guy's not been good.
What would you score that on a 1 to 10 of a save?
Like 9.8,
yeah,
right?
That was an amazing save.
World-class. Barnes.
Harvey Barnes.
Is that not a cool little player?
That is.
What a good player.
You know what's interesting about him is that you kind of watch him and you just think he's one of those stereotypical really good footballers, but he's not that next level elite.
Yeah.
He actually really is.
Yeah.
Like there's something really cool to that kid's game.
And for those that don't know, he plays for Leicester. So, but you know, he's looking, I think he's going to have a move to a
Madison
club.
Is another one.
Madison is a laser of
a free kick taker. Yeah. I would love to see Madison on a better team. Leicester's a really interesting story too because they're not having a great season. They've had a lot of injuries. I don't know where everybody sits on Brendan Rodgers as a manager with them. They clearly should be doing better than they currently are. They're down in ninth place. So after the result today, by the way, they end up tying 1-1. Of all people on United, Fred rescues them, and VAR rescues them too, by the way, because there was a Leicester goal that was pulled back because they saw a foul, and it was correct. That was the right decision.
Ticky-tacky, but correct.
But Fred, who's now the new Engine 8 on United, of all things. They end up drawing 1-1. So United and Spurs are tied at 51 points, but Spurs has a game in hand. United is at the 30 games. I think the most anybody's played at this point is 31.
It's going to be tough for United to catch Arsenal.
There was a really interesting tweet today. One of the broadcasters in England posted a video. He did something very nerdy, something very I would do. He went back and did a complete listing by hand of all of the seasons in the Premier League and where teams were stacked in the top five and the bottom four with nine games remaining.
Interesting study.
And then showed how much change there was at nine games to the end of that particular season. And he did it in black pen. Yeah, and then if there was any change in the final, he'd write them in red. And he proved out, at least by the eyeball test, where things are in the with nine games remaining, it tends to stay that way with very, very few exceptions. In fact, in all the years of the Premier League, I think there was only one time at the top that it changed.
Now, does 1 point separation?
I don't know. We tweeted that over at the Kick Round if you want to see it for yourself. It's pretty fascinating. And then in the other games today, Brighton and Norwich tied at Donuts. By the way, Mappe had a penalty kick that he blew into the stands. Oh, it was the worst penalty kick. Southampton and Leeds, another good result for Jesse Marsh.
Relatively
good. Yeah. You know, hey, they didn't lose.
No, they could have won this game. They should have won this game. The free kick, though, was something else.
Southampton, they tied 1-1. So Leeds now, I think Jesse is safe. He's at 30 points in 16th place.
Careful.
Okay, I probably spoke too soon.
Yeah, careful.
And the other, I think this is a surprising result. Aston Villa lost today on the road at Wolves. Wolves scored twice, ended up, one of the goals was a Ashley Young own goal, kind of gifted it for Wolves. But they ended up beating Aston Villa today 2-1. That'll be a disappointment to Sean Bass and all the Villain fans out there. So currently the Premier League looks like this. Man City is at the top with 73 points. Liverpool with 72. Chelsea 59 and third. Arsenal, which played Crystal Palace on Monday at Selhurst Park. That's an interesting one. They are in fourth with 54. And then Spurs, they play tomorrow morning at 10:30 against Newcastle, who, by the way, I think I'm correct in saying have not lost a Premier League game since the middle of December. I think I'm right. Look that up, Andy. Okay. Newcastle's on a run. They're up to 15th place. Oh, wait, no, I take that back. They did lose.
They lost two straight.
That's all right. I was.
That's why I was like.
You're right. They lost to Chelsea and they lost to Everton. Yeah. I'm screwing that.
They had a streak going.
They did have a streak going. I forgot about the last two. I was so high on the Saudi owned.
Are you sure you weren't dreaming?
Yeah, I probably was. All right. I shouldn't be hosting a soccer show. Anyway.
Everton's still the story there that, you know, they're still close to relegation. They play tomorrow.
They play tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock against West Ham. And then there are a bunch of, there are a few other games the rest of the week. There's a game Wednesday between Burnley and Everton. And Friday, Newcastle and Wolves kick off before the next weekend set of games on Saturday. So there you go. So there is, oh, by the way, at the bottom, Everton, as I said, who play tomorrow, now have a 3-point gap between them and Watford. Watford at 22, Burnley at 21, and Norwich at 18.
Yeah. Everton has games in hand. That's the thing that they haven't going in their favor. But, you know, you lose a game here and you lose a game there, and those games in hand don't matter anymore.
Yeah, well, they've only won one game in their last five, so what are you going to do?
I'm lucky for the Blues.
All right, when we come back, as I said earlier, the quarterfinals of the Champions League pick up this week, and we'll talk about those pairings next here on The Kick Around. I am a nerd. Well, Andy, this has been kind of a dreamy episode of The Kick Around for you and I. We've talked a little world. We talked a lot of World Cup. A
little tease of what's coming.
We talked some Premier League. Mm-hmm. And not only now are we going to talk Champions League, but we're about to talk about the best part of the Champions League.
The quarterfinals.
The quarterfinals. Yeah. This is always, without question, the best part of the Champions League. Because it's two legs, you still got a chance for an upset. It's not the four biggest teams. There's always kind of a couple of teams in there that you're like, oh, man, it'd be such a Cinderella story if they were to win their
some
tie.
Juicy matchups as well.
And there are good matchups without a doubt.
And out of the eight teams, we have three EPL, one German, one Portuguese team, and three La Liga teams. Because there's a lot of talk about how La Liga is like this and that. At the end of the day, you know, Barcelona is in Europa League, but you have two others other than Real Madrid representing La Liga. It shows you that La Liga is still, at least at the top, a very strong league. And no Italian team and no French team advanced to the top eight.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. It's going to be great. There are really good lineups here. So it starts Tuesday. The two games on Tuesday is Benfica, the Portuguese team, hosting Liverpool. Mm-hmm. That is a draw for your team, Andy, that I think you were relieved to have gotten.
Yes.
If you were going to get any other team in this.
Yeah, Benfica or Villarreal were the two that you'd hope for.
You'd hope for.
Yes.
And then Manchester City host Atletico Madrid.
That's... I think City, it might be the favorite to win it at this point, just because it's something Pepperly wants and the team wants and all that. But man, Atletico Madrid, as you know, not an easy
And as Liverpool
opponent.
Knows.
And as Liverpool knows, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Without question, Atletico, even though this has not been a great season for Atletico, they've been very on-off. That is a team designed for this type of tournament.
Yep.
That's what they're built to do.
That's why they've gotten to finals of the Champions League, playing this style.
And they're designed to deaden the old Barcelona, the stereotypical Barcelona, right?
Yep.
The old Pep-style Barcelona.
Right, yes.
And that's why I think this is a fascinating matchup.
And I think if Pep probably was trying to avoid or was hoping to avoid one team, with all due respect to Liverpool and Bayern, Real... This is probably a matchup he didn't want.
Yeah, I agree. And because they don't have a traditional nine this season, they've been kind of forced to score in other ways. When you're dealing with a team that loves to defend in a low block like Atletico does, it suddenly changes. It adds to the difficulty level for City. That is going to be a fun tie to watch.
Yep.
And then on Wednesday, the other pairing, Villarreal is hosting Bayern. And then Chelsea... is hosting Real Madrid.
Yeah, I think Bayern the clear favorite with the paired with Villarreal, but the Chelsea-Real Madrid matchup also quite intriguing because a month ago, if you'd say, okay, these two are going to play each other in Champions League, you'd think Chelsea really the favorite. Real Madrid was on kind of on a downturn. Chelsea on his way up, solidly in third place in EPL. But now with all the turmoil around Chelsea, Real Madrid with that huge tie win against PSG,
right?
I wouldn't count Real Madrid out in this particular tie.
No, and you do. This is part of the whole Chelsea story going on right now, that you do begin to wonder how much does all of the craziness going on with the ownership situation affect these types of these games. I mean, look, they lost to Brentford today, and they didn't just lose. They gave up. I mean, when was the last time Chelsea gave up four goals in one half of soccer?
Yeah, that defending was just bad
again
game.
Now maybe they're looking forward to their Champions League game, and they're coming off international break, and it's just a bad game. It's a one-off deal.
Right.
But Real Madrid has to feel like they've got a little bit of momentum and a kind of a thing on their side, and they still have that midfield, right?
Yep. And now we have to look ahead to the semis, because the Liverpool-Benfica group or tie is tied in with the Bayern-Villarreal matchup. So the winners of those two will face each other, which means that Chelsea, Man City, Real Madrid, and Atletico Madrid are all in the same grouping.
You could end up with an all Premier League or an all La Liga semifinal.
But I think Liverpool and Bayern probably, like, they'd rather be in that little grouping that they're in, and like, okay, we'll take our chances against each other in the semis and have those other four kind of burn each other out.
And then those things flip next week, the week of on Tuesday the 12th and Wednesday the 13th. The Bayern will host Villarreal on that Tuesday. Then it's Real and Chelsea on that same day. And then on Wednesday, Atletico hosts Man City. And then Liverpool hosts Benfica. And that works definitely in Liverpool's favor. Do you, at this point, Andy, have a prediction of who will win the Champions League?
Yeah, you asked me, I think, at the start of the segment, and I said, I think City. City is going to win it.
I am surprised at the number of pundits that I have read and heard over the last couple of weeks have predicted Chelsea as the winner of this thing. Because it's Tuchel, the depth of their roster, and just the fact they won it last year.
These are all predictions made before today, before this morning.
Yes, before they losing to Brentford.
A one-off.
And I'm not saying I'm predicting Chelsea.
Yeah, okay.
I'm just surprised at the number of people that still believe that, because, again, as I said earlier, I'm curious as to how much the ownership thing affects them.
To the players, I don't think that much, but it could affect some things with being able to, like, budget for certain things, that little thing. But I think City's a team on a mission. I mean, I know we keep saying it. Okay, this is City's year to win Champions League and this and that. But, man, they're looking so good now. Like, when it's all said and done, it's all about how good you are, right? And
yeah.
Who do you think?
Man, I have no strong feelings about anybody. There's a weird part of me that thinks Bayern's going to come out and just and cook it.
Yeah, right. But Bayern typically, though, by the time they get to this stage of the Champions League, is not worried about Bundesliga anymore.
Right.
And it's a little bit tighter this year, by a little bit, but not by much.
Not by much, but obviously City and Liverpool have got something going on.
Sure.
Chelsea, not really, I suppose.
Yeah, right, yeah. So in that regard,
Benfica, I just don't think is a player in this story, and neither is Villarreal.
Right.
So if I'm just going to pick somebody to say somebody, I'm just going to say Bayern.
All right. Okay.
So those games start this week on the 5th, and then the second leg is next week. The semifinals don't take place until the 27th. They're both on the 27th, or the first leg's on the 27th, the second leg's the 4th, and then the Champions League final takes place on the 28th of May.
In France.
Is that where? Do you know where in France is
Stade
being played?
Stade de France.
Okay.
Paris.
You mean PSG's not going to be able to play?
I know. Wow.
That's disappointing. All right, so the Champions League. I'm saying, if you've not picked up and started watching Champions League, now is the time to do it. These games are always great. They show them on Paramount Plus, and you can always watch them on demand after the fact when that happens. All right, we come back. We will now do America's favorite soccer segment, and it's known as The Dribble, next on The Kick Around.
Grab your beverage of choice and be part of Cowboys Happy Hour every Wednesday at 7 on The Tick. Our ranch reporter, David Moore, and Pigskin.
Did you pick this song on purpose?
What are you talking about?
You know he's been playing World Cup related songs too. I'm sure you're on top of it.
I'm just checking. I'm just saying, it seems to be a weird time to be playing Get Jiggy With It. Unless you're just trying to, are you trying to get us to throw in our opinion on the Will Smith situation?
I'm just playing songs. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
You just randomly picked it? All right. Welcome back to the Kick Around Saturdays 2 to 4. This is the final segment of today's show. And, let's just do it. It's America's favorite soccer segment. It's known as The Dribble. Andy, we have national team drama. Okay, it's not an active national team player.
Yeah, a little bit more accuracy in your statement, please.
I'm clickbaiting you.
Yeah, right. Ear-baiting.
I'm clickbaiting you.
Ear-baiting.
I'm ear-baiting. That sounds weird. In the news today is one Hope Solo.
Not national team.
Former national team great. And I think now, ironically, due to be inducted into the National Soccer Hall of Fame in Frisco here in a few weeks.
One of the 2022 inductees. Correct?
I wonder now if Hope will show up for that, because she was arrested. And not just arrested for DWI. She was found passed out in her car with her twin children in the back seat in a parking lot.
Just sitting in the car.
Passed out in the front. In North Carolina.
And she, I think, refused the breathalyzer, right?
And there was some resisting arrest added to the charge as well, too.
There's a history there, too, right? Going back.
Fine, black.
Yeah.
She's a troubled soul.
She's had some issues for sure. But I had forgotten about the Hall of Fame thing. I wonder.
Clint Dempsey and Marco Echeverry, too, are getting in.
Yes, that should be a good time.
Clint, Texas' own.
Hey, we talked a lot of World Cup today. Did you see the introduction of the World Cup soccer ball?
No.
The Al Rila.
Did that happen during the draw?
It was actually the day before the draw.
Okay. No.
It's kind of a subdued design.
Yeah.
It's white with kind of a rainbow of colors, oddly enough. It's very unusual that they put rainbow on the ball being used in
Qatar.
In Qatar, yes.
Qatar. We got to talk about the pronunciation.
I think it's Qatar. But you're the man of international mystery. If you tell me it's Qatar, I'll
Well,
go.
No. It's neither Qatar nor Qatar, but it sounds closer to Qatar.
Okay.
I'll say that.
Now, of course, this is the 22nd official design of a World Cup ball, by the way.
By Adidas, right? Always Adidas ball. Yep.
And every time this is always my favorite part of the World Cup ball introduction, is what amazing new ability particular ball have.
And that players will hate.
Right.
Either the goalkeepers or the forwards. One of them is going to hate it.
If I'm understanding correctly, the ball this year will now travel faster than any previous World Cup ball.
So goalkeepers
capable of traveling faster.
Mm.
There was a ball, I think it was the Jubilani, the South African ball, that was the one that was had all the crazy twisty, knuckly.
Moved, knuckled.
Yeah, so the Al Riata.
That's actually one that both players and goalkeepers hated. Your favorite World Cup ball of all time. I don't know if you've followed World Cup in soccer this far back, but do you remember the Tango?
The Tango was cool, but I liked the one, the Telestar before it, the traditional soccer focus. Yeah, the black and white.
The 74.
That's what that's the first exposure to the ball that I remember as a kid. So
black and white panels all the way around.
But the Telestar was the third ball, and it had kind of the same idea, except it was a little bit of an outline on the alternating panels.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that the one you're talking about?
I think you're talking about the Tango, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
World Cup soccer ball history and facts is actually a really cool rabbit hole to fall into. In fact, there's a really good article about it. I will I'll tweet. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, that one. Yeah. I was looking at the one to the right.
That's the Tango.
The Tango, right.
Yep. That's the one.
At the Kick Around.
All-time best.
Speaking of World Cup qualifying in the World Cup, are you aware of the, because of COVID, all of the qualifying in the different confederations has been really weird. Mm-hmm. But did you hear about how New Zealand ended up being the team out of Oceania. Have you heard about the insanity and the goofiness of the Oceania qualifying process?
No, but do you, first of all, you have to explain which countries play in Oceania, which is really New Zealand and a bunch of little islands.
Yeah. It's like the Cook Islands, the Solomon Islands. Right. I'd have to go.
It's like a tier below the minnows in CONCACAF when we talk about those minnows. It's like a tier below that.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think they beat the
Tahiti.
Solomon. Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, the reason why the whole thing is crazy, and the reality is for most of these nations, the guys playing on these teams aren't even professional soccer players. Mm-hmm. There are guys that play like in an amateur Sunday league that you and I play in for many of these nations. And New Zealand is really the only one that has a predominance of World Cup players. And that's why Oceania only gets one slot if they can beat another confederation's fourth best team. And in this case, it's CONCACAF's team, which happens to be Costa Rica. And that rotates. Like last time, if the United States had gotten into the fourth, they were going to have to play, Uruguay to make it to Russia?
Yeah,
Is that what it was? South America.
Yeah, but in the past, you know, South America's had to play New Zealand. It's just it rotates.
Well, so because of COVID and all of the craziness with COVID, the Oceania Confederation was forced to push all of the final qualifying to Qatar last week in a series of games in kind of a knockout tournament.
In Doha. Yeah.
And it was Vanuatu, the Cook Islands, Tahiti,
Solomon Islands,
and Solomon Islands, New Zealand, Papua New Guinea, and they were playing in this whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, Vanuatu makes this incredible trip to get Vanuatu, or I don't know how it's pronounced, to get all the way there, only to have an outbreak of COVID in their team, and they didn't even get to play a game, and they had to forfeit and go home.
And the Cook Islands, too, withdrew.
Yes, and the Cook Islands end up having to withdraw because they ended up having a COVID outbreak.
Yeah.
And so the whole thing got to be this incredible mess, and ultimately it ended up being the Solomon Islands and New Zealand playing one game, and New Zealand ended up beating like 5-2 or something like that.
Always wins out of Oceania. It used to be Australia was part of this, and Australia, for their own development, asked to be moved to Asia, which makes it harder for them to get to the World Cup. But in the long term, it's better for them to develop as a soccer nation. New Zealand stays in Oceania, and that means automatically they qualify for whatever playoff. I don't know if it's good for New Zealand's development when it's all said and done, when they're playing a bunch of these teams all the time.
Well, it's not. I mean, a lot of people for years have said the United States should see if they could play in CONMEBOL or something. You don't want that to happen. It's a weird
story. But it might be good for the development because it forces you to eventually get better.
Yeah, I suppose.
It won't matter anymore because everybody's going to make
a World
Cup.
How has that worked out for Bolivia?
Yeah, not too good. By the way, rumors are that Bielsa will be hired by Bolivia. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I've seen that too.
I'm bummed. I want Chile to hire him again. Anyway, we digress.
I'm sorry about Chile not going through anything.
That's okay.
Are you brokenhearted about that?
You know, I'm sad, but the Golden Generation just ran out of steam, and they weren't good enough to go. I'm good.
All right.
And then, moving forward, all teams are going to make the World Cup. Or half of them. 48.
Yeah.
48.
Can we worry? But that's not till after the 26 World Cup.
No, 2026. This is the last one with this format.
Well, see, I keep forgetting. Because they keep, you know, because the United States won't have to qualify for the next World Cup, I always forget that that new format actually starts in the next World Cup.
Yes.
Yeah, I have no idea. So the other thing about the World Cup that I did not know until this week, I mean, I'm a stupid American. I admit this.
Okay.
I knew that Qatar as a nation was tiny.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I actually went on a website called The True Size Of, where you can actually take countries and overlay them to kind of do comparisons, that I found out that Qatar is so small that Qatar is actually essentially the size of the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex.
Right, with a gaming plate in Frisco, another in Garland, another in...
and the of the seven venues, six of the venues are playing so closely together, they're essentially playing inside the city of Dallas.
Yeah, crazy.
It's as if they were playing games at SMU, Oak Cliff, Mesquite.
Richardson.
Pleasant Grove, yeah. Frisco, and Irving.
Yeah.
It is, there is, the furthest distance between any two stadiums in Qatar is 35 miles apart.
Yeah.
The distance between stadiums in Qatar is less than, on average, is less than 10 miles apart.
Yeah, that's crazy. By far the smallest country to ever host. The next smallest was Switzerland before that in 54. But this introduces an interesting dynamic to how teams prepare for World Cups, because those teams that are repeat World Cup contenders, the Germanys, Italy's, France, you know, all those big countries, Brazil, they have the logistics down of how to set up camp in a World Cup, how to do the travel, how to like do training, and take travel into account. That
it's all gone.
You don't need to have that expertise anymore.
Yeah,
or that extensive expertise, and so it evens the field a little bit.
It does. And what's the benefit for viewers is that they've assigned the starting times for games that best fit.
Yeah.
The broadcast schedule of the two countries playing in that game. So that's why, like the United States, all of their games are at 1 p.m. Yeah. Central time.
And not at 4, because we're going to have some 4 a.m. Yeah. games in the group stage. 4, 7, 10, and 1.
Yes.
Game times.
All right. I want to finish up by telling you a funny story that I heard from one Buzz Carrick of Third Degree. He told it on his podcast, but it's such a good story, I need to share it here. As you know, FC Dallas is pretty good at this academy thing at the youth level. And it's gotten to the point where other clubs consider beating FC Dallas a pretty substantial achievement. You may or may not know that St. Louis is one of the next MLS clubs coming. In fact, they've got a pretty interesting model going on. They've already put their academy system together and have academy teams that are playing within the new MLS system. Several weeks ago, the story goes that the U-17s between Dallas and St. Louis were supposed to play each other in St. Louis. Dallas, for whatever reason, had to send not their best team, which is not commonplace, because really for Dallas, this is about growth and progress and development, not about winning games.
They often do that, by the way, when they play tournaments.
Yeah. And many times, a U-17 team is made up of kids that are 16 or 15. They're playing up an age group.
Yeah.
So they go to St. Louis. St. Louis wins that game 4-2. And the story has been told that in the moments and days after that game, St. Louis parents, players were on social media bragging about beating, posting the scoreboard on social media, talking about how they had beaten the vaunted FC Dallas Academy team, and they are going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Okay.
Last week, St. Louis came down to Frisco. And lo and behold, Dallas rolls out.
Let's go ahead and play the A team.
They brought out the A team. They brought some of the kids down that are age eligible that have been playing with the U-19s down to the 17s.
Let's make a statement kind of game.
And said, okay, this how you want to roll. FC Dallas beat St. Louis 14-0.
Yeah. Any social media posts by St. Louis after that?
I saw one social media post who had retweeted the final score that had been posted, and it was from one of the fan group accounts that said, oh, God, no, please say this isn't true.
Yeah.
They poked the bear.
Yeah, careful with that.
14-0. I know nobody will admit it and probably openly deny it, but that's running up the score, and I'm all in for it.
Yeah, because you're reacting to something that was social media out of lineness. Hey, speaking of the FC Dallas Academy, real quick, in 10 seconds, you get 10 seconds to answer this question. After Matt Hedges, who is the longest tenured FC Dallas player on their roster right now?
Paxton Pomacall.
Boom, you got it right. Amazing, isn't it?
It is. It is pretty crazy. That
like
is
when
nice.
I was told that, I was like, you got to be kidding me. And then I went through the roster and was like, yep.
Yeah.
Crazy. Our own Paxton Pomacall.
Our own Paxton Pomacall. Will he make the World Cup roster?
Oh, come on, man. We can do this, Paxton.
With those extra slots?
Yes, we can do this.
Absolutely. All right. Andy, the World Cup is almost here. Are you excited as I am? Are you probably even more excited than I am?
Do I even need to tell you this?
Do you have like a little World Cup? You know what I realized? I need to get the World Cup trophy off the out of storage and bring it out.
Yes.
And put it out on the kitchen counter.
There you go.
It's that time of it's that season.
Right. All your jerseys, all your like superstitious hijink stuff that you need to
What happened?
Do.
What happened to our music?
It just ran out right now. Sorry.
All right, but here, I'll do this instead.
You talk too long.
No, we have... All right, whatever. The bed ran out. Has that ever happened to us before?
Yes, I don't think actually. So. Not during your tenure, but it has.
Has it?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know you were all in a hurry to go.
I'm not. I didn't force the bed to run out.
All right. Well, hopefully we're back next week. I think there's some question as to whether or not there's a Stars game in our way, but hopefully we are back next week.
But if not the week after, it's okay. We'll keep rolling through it.
We got a lot of soccer to talk all the time. Never-ending soccer
talk.
And
when EPL season is over and it's summertime, that's when we're going to really jump into World Cup talk, right?
Yep. Thanks, Jacob, for doing tickers. Thank you, EA, for pulling double duty today, producing and running the board. And thank you, P1s. We love and adore you. Get stuck in and win your 50s.
Broadcasting live from the TXU Energy Mothership at Victory Park, hard by the AAC. This is Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket. KTCK AM, Dallas-Fort Worth. KTCK FM, Flower Mound. A Cumulus Media Station.